Welcome to Family Talk.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Dr. Meg Meeker, along with my co-host, Ryan Dobson, and we are recording this program from the Shrine Auditorium in Los Angeles, California, because we are attending the Dave Ramsey Smart Conference.
That's right.
Our next guest is someone who should be familiar with our listeners because he's written one of the greatest marriage books of all time, one of the ones that I do hand out to newly marrieds, people who have been married for a longer time. I want to get my husband to read it. And that is the book Love and Respect. Our guest is Dr. Emerson Eggerich. He is a best-selling author of Love and Respect, which is now on the New York Times bestseller list. Congratulations.
Thank you.
It has sold over 1.3 million copies. Emerson is an internationally known public speaker on the topic of male-female relationships, and he is also the founder and president of Love and Respect Ministries. Thank you for being here, Emerson.
Oh, no, I'm excited, Meg. Yeah. And Ryan, thank
it's good
you.
Good to have you, definitely.
Yeah.
Emerson, you have been talking here at the SMART conference about marriage and relationship. Mm-hmm. What do you think are the key ingredients in a successful marriage?
Well, excellent question. The University of Washington studied 2,000 couples for 20 years and in a laboratory setting, and they said, we now know the two key ingredients for successful marriages, love and respect, and said that when those two attitudes are present, the marriage succeeds, and when those two attitudes are not present, the marriage fails. Mm. And it was quite a dramatic insight. It doesn't mean that people don't have challenges. We all have health issues, in-law issues, money issues, parenting concerns, and these are real issues. But what they discovered is if a husband and wife bring hostile, contemptuous attitudes, and when we're upset, we don't always see ourselves appearing that way, but we can, that he's harsh, he's angry, he comes across in a way that feels hostile to her, unloving to her, and she's coming across in a way that's rude, disrespectful, contemptuous. The human spirit in the face of that deflates. And then what happens, a husband and wife can get confused because they think if we didn't have these money problems,
we
wouldn't be having this marital problem.
Exactly, yeah.
And so they attach the
There's problem. Some very happy people out there with happy marriages that have no money whatsoever.
You can have a great relationship in the midst of these stresses.
Sure.
And that should give us hope, even though none of us want the stresses. And, you know, the guy says, I've been rich and I've been poor. Rich is better. And it's true.
Right. Uh-huh.
We all know that and we agree that. We're all mature enough. But the person who's struggling needs to be reminded that the relationship won't go under because of these stresses that are coming at us. What will destroy the relationship is the ongoing sense that I really don't love you and I really don't respect you.
You know, Emerson, in today's culture, especially pop culture, love is supposed to be something that is given freely. You don't have to earn love. You know, we just give love. But respect, I mean, across the board, I've talked about this, and you see people's brows furrow or their eyes get big and they think, no, you have to earn my respect. Respect is something you earn. And if you don't, and I see that in couples, in their marriages, in their counseling, you know, well, I just don't respect him. I can't respect him. He's earned it.
That's right.
How do you turn that on its head and say, no, that's something you can just give away.
Right. Well, and that's an honest sentiment that's out there because of the reasons you stated. The culture takes the position that love is unconditional, whereas respect must be earned, it must be deserved. And the feeling is, if I don't feel it and you haven't really demonstrated that you're worthy of that, that you're not really respectable, then I'd be hypocritical to show you respect.
Exactly.
And I don't want to be a hypocrite because you don't want me to do something I don't feel. And then you add on to that the idea that respect must be earned, it must be deserved, that you show respect to your superiors, and the person says, I'm not inferior, I'm not going to be treated like a doormat, I'm not going to give that person license to do whatever it is that, you know, I'm supposed to just respect bad behavior and come in as a cheerleader with a pom-pom and just say, you go ahead and do whatever you want, and I'll respect you no matter what. And then there's a feeling, if I do this, I'm going to lose a sense of self, a sense of influence, I'm going to subject myself to emotional abuse. I mean, there is this mantra of objections to this concept called unconditional respect. And unconditional respect is what we call an oxymoron in many ways. It's something that is a contradiction. And so the question on the table is then, we know we're supposed to love unconditionally, but the idea of respecting unconditionally, I mean, that's so demeaning. But here's the deal. We're not talking about respecting bad behavior any more than we're talking about loving bad behavior.
Yeah.
We lovingly confront behavior that's unlovable. right? Mm-hmm. We all know that. A mother lovingly confronts the behavior of her son,
yes,
who's disobeying, but she's loving, but she's going to be truthful.
Yes.
Why do we have such a difficult time then saying, unconditional respect means this isn't about who you fail to be, this is about who I'm going to be, and who I'm going to be is I'm going to respectfully confront your behavior that's not respectable. Mm-hmm. I'm going to respectfully confront your behavior that's not respectable. And in other words, there's nothing you can do to get me to show you contempt. Unconditional means there's no condition, no situation, no circumstance that can get me to show you contempt or to hate you.
Right.
Unconditional love means there's no condition, no situation, no circumstance that can get me to hate you. And the same thing applies to you can't do anything to get me to show you contempt. Now, that's not easy to do.
No.
But that has to be understood up front. Otherwise, mm-hmm, then my disrespect is your fault.
That's right.
That
yes.
I'm a disrespectful, a contemptuous, rude individual because you make me that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that would be an erroneous conclusion. It doesn't mean that this is without pain. But once people get this, Ryan, particularly women, because the Bible says husbands must love and wives must respect, it's that second part of the verse that this pushback comes. And it's
sure.
the women who frown because you and I serve and die for honor. We're highly motivated by this.
Of course.
But the disconnect between what you and I feel a bit is honor of one another and mm-hmm. what women feel about honoring men, it's light years. So we're trying to put back on the radar screen this idea that this is who God calls you to be as a woman.
Sure.
A woman of dignity who respectfully confronts issues that are unacceptable to you, just as God calls me to love Sarah, even though there are times she's not lovable or respectable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I believe I read once that one of the top reasons for men having affairs on their wives had nothing to do with sex, but it was they wanted admiration and attention.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
And the men overwhelmingly responded when they asked, why did you have this affair? It had nothing to do with sex. And I found that intriguing, and my ears as a wife perked up, and I thought, I really sort of took some inventory. How am I speaking to my husband, and am I, you know, acting respectfully?
Wow. Wow.
We're living in a culture.
And I appreciate your tender heart. You've got,
thanks.
And women who are listening, you need to understand, here you have all these degrees, all this capability, but you understand the male spirit.
Yes.
And it's not demeaning to you to understand that your husband has a need and a vulnerability. This is not about his ego.
No,
but
no.
We've framed this about ego. But you have enough wisdom to realize, you know what, I'm not going to reframe this through my femininity and redefine then what this should really mean, that men somehow are really wrong for having these sentiments.
Right.
Instead, you said, you know what, God made us differently, and I'm going to trust this information, this insightful information, and give my husband the benefit of the doubt. The difference between men and women is women will break down and cry.
Yes.
And so there's an empathy immediately. Mm-hmm. We tend to get angry and pull back. And so there's a misread on our vulnerability and the pain we're in. And so what we're trying to do is put back on the table the wisdom that you've got. Let's just take this by faith and believe that there's a need here and a vulnerability rather than profiling it as narcissistic.
Yes. You know, we're living in a culture that is so cruel to fathers. It bashes fathers. Mm. A lot of money is made by ridiculing fathers on television, you know, sitcoms and so on and so forth.
Commercials,
everything. Yeah. And it's sort of become big money. And in light of what you're talking about, that the male ego really needs, or male emotional health mm-hmm. needs a sense of respect, it's really frightening what could happen to our country. I know as I go out and I speak to women on your topic and talk to them about the need to respect their husbands, many women will roll their eyes
mm-hmm,
and
exactly.
say, oh, you're kidding. You don't know my husband. Mm-hmm. And I said, but I don't need to know your husband. So
really?
Oh, yeah.
See, I get the opposite. It's interesting because you're asking this question. Mine was going to be, how do you do it in the long haul? But you get pushback.
Tremendous.
I explain this to younger women or people in, you know, my age category below, and it's almost like that cartoon light bulb goes off of, oh, wait, that's what he wants. Mm-hmm. I mean, because we always think about the love, unconditional love, unconditional
right.
love.
Mm-hmm.
Men need respect.
They need it
more than love. They need it more than that. And that's why, you know, you were saying
and I think
men cheat, it's not sex, it's just respect.
And I think there's a real misunderstanding that women believe that if they're going to show respect to their husband, that means they have to become a doormat and just
correct.
Do whatever he
mm-hmm.
says. And particularly in many churches, because I hear women will say this.
Wow.
So I get a lot of pushback from women saying, are you kidding? I'm supposed to respect my husband. You don't know my husband. Talk to that woman who mm-hmm. comes up to me mm-hmm. and says that.
Well, and it's a fear. Women have a fear that they're going to be asked to do something that is contrary to their sense of right and wrong, that somehow we're asking them to respect things that are not respectable. And that's exactly what we're not asking them to do.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about not who the husband is failing to be. We're talking about who God calls her to be.
Yes.
And what we're saying is you've got to come to a point where you ask yourself, does any person on this planet respond to contempt? I will tell you that no husband feels fond feelings of love and affection in his heart toward a wife he thinks despises who he is as a human being.
Yep.
It ain't going to work. So let's begin with the fact that you and I both feel uncomfortable showing respect to someone who is not acting in a way that's respectable. I get that. But I will tell you that contempt and disdain and rudeness and the sighs and the sour look and the all of those things are going to close him off. That's for sure. So now we've got to find somewhere in between here. And what does it mean? It means learning how to respectfully confront those issues that are upsetting. And you can even get upset. Say, I don't want to disrespect you right now. I'm not trying to dishonor you. No human being should be dishonored. But I'm so spitting mad right now. Talk to me. You're a man of honor. But I'm so hurting right now. Can we talk about this? How do I say this in such a way that you don't think I'm just trying to diss you right now?
Mm-hmm.
See, all of that is free game. And most men who have never heard that from their wives in 20 years will grin. Will grin because it's like, wow, I'm hearing my mother tongue. You see, do you see what I was doing in all of that? Did you see the, what I call respect talk?
Yeah.
It's not loving. No, saying, I don't know how to do this loving thing. No. Don't use the love word. Use the honor, respect word. I don't know how to honor you, maybe. I'm not trying to dishonor you. Use that vocabulary, and it's very attractive. Just as a husband says, you know my family of origin. You know my old man. You know all the lack of love in our family. I don't know how to do this loving thing, and you're the most loving human being on the planet. How do I say this to you in a loving way? Because I don't know how I'm going to say you backed into the garage the third time, and this is costing me money. Okay? Now, every woman is going to engage that.
Exactly.
You see, because she sees what he's trying to do. He's in tune with the need. He's in tune with her mother tongue. And I'm saying to women, you don't have to be perfect in this. Just introduce that language. Even say, I don't know how to do this. And also let him know you're not trying to be disrespectful. Mm-hmm. Is that so hard to do?
No.
That's the question.
Are couples in a power struggle? Because I'm wondering, a lot of women and a lot of men may not want to do that because they always want to have the upper hand. And I kind of wonder, is a lot of their dialogue centered around one person having their way all the time or being more powerful? Does that make sense at all?
Yeah, I mean, if we married this person, let's assume there's goodwill. And I always try to take people back because there are a lot of things that happen that people start resenting each other. But I always say my message is for couples of goodwill. If you married Hitler's distant cousin, it ain't going to work, you know.
Right.
But that's an awesome thing to call someone, you know, evil-willed and ill-willed. So I always appeal to them, let's just assume basic goodwill, even though you're spitting mad at each other. But now back to this point, can one feel like if I do this, I'm going to lose power? I believe this. The key to motivating another person is meeting that person's deepest need, especially during conflict. And we talk about the crazy cycle. When a wife feels unloved, she tends to react in a way that feels disrespectful to her husband. And when a husband feels disrespected, he reacts in a way that feels unloving to his wife. And this baby spins. Without love, she reacts without respect. Without respect, he reacts without love. And it spins and spins and spins. Okay, so the last thing I want to do at that point is be loving if I'm feeling dissed. And the last thing I want to do is be respectful if I'm feeling unloved. And I definitely don't want to do it if I feel like I'm giving in to them, that they can treat me in any way they want, undermine my needs, and me in the process meet their needs. So the sense of injustice here is off the charts. And so we have to ask ourselves, what would give me the incentive, the motivation to do this? And my position is we need to trust that over a period of time, this actually empowers you. It does not cause you to lose power. You may lose this battle, but if you keep doing this, you're going to win the war. Why? Because you got to be married to one bad dude or dudess. If let's just suppose that wife is dissing you because, and she's probably not intending to, but she's coming across that way because no one talks to you the way she does. I get that. But the question is she getting up early to think of ways of dissing you, or she's just insecure and feeling unloved and she's reacting in this way to get your attention that she has a need that only you can meet. But in the delivery of that, she's undermining your need. You have to ask yourself, do you have the power? Are you a man of honor enough that if you were to soften and actually try to meet that need in her for love, do you think she's going to continue to try to control you and get on top of you?
Mm.
There isn't one woman I know that would say that she wants to do that. If for no other reason, it's not a sexual turn on.
Yeah.
Women don't want to have sex with someone they're controlling. That's not part of their makeup.
Yep.
So what we have to trust is this will empower you as a man, not cause you to lose it. But initially it might,
yes.
But not long term. So too, wives need to say, if I put on respect when he is not respectable and isn't who I want him to be, my question is, if you say, well, you know what, I dishonored you here, please forgive me, and just go off, even though he's 70% guilty and you're 30% guilty, women think at that point they're losing power, they're demeaning themselves, they're forsaking the feminist team and all that. You know what I predict? If he has any degree of goodwill and she does that, within 15 minutes he will come to her and he will make a gesture. He may not just say, I'm sorry, will you forgive me? Can we write poetry together? You know, that's not going to happen. But he may be
does
under
Walt
the sink.
Do that to you, man?
He may be under the sink fixing the faucet that you've been asking him to do for the last month. Mm-hmm. There's always a gesture, and it's a loving gesture. It may be a hug. It may be a humor. It may be a pinch. He will do something, and it's his way as a man saying, I was wrong. Mm-hmm. And I say to women, look for it, because it'll always be there. You don't lose power on the heels of this. You will see his spirit soften and move toward you in some way. And you have to ask the question, do you want that kind of power.
Mm, yeah. You know, and it can be so easy to do because you're really talking about, you talked about an attitude of love and an attitude of respect. But really sometimes, you know, if we just start changing the way we speak to somebody and speak respectfully, even though you may disrespect your husband a lot, but if you just change the way you speak to him and may even begin to make him feel, you're meeting a deep need in me, so now I will start to soften. And I imagine you turn that cycle on its head and it begins to flourish and change.
Oh, yeah. It's
she
called
respects
the energy.
Him
yeah.
more. Yeah.
His love motivates her respect motivates his love, then his love motivates her respect, then her respect. And it goes upward. It's the energizing cycle. Mm-hmm. Again, the key to motivating another person is meeting that person's deepest need. And it always begs the question, well, who moves first? And I remember praying about it, and the Lord said in that inaudible way, the one who sees himself or herself as the most mature moves first. Mm-hmm. And so if my spouse is always reacting in these childish ways, in ways that I wouldn't react, then that means you're the mature one, mm-hmm. and therefore you move first. But it comes back to this issue of attitude, as you're saying. It's attitudinal, it's demeanor. It is word choice. It's the way in which we talk.
Mm-hmm.
See, men are very tender.
Yes.
That hardness that women see, it's a defense mechanism.
It's defense mechanism.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Teenage boys. I mean, that's what I see in my practice is teenage boys. You know, we look at them as they're so rough and tough and can take anything, but their hearts get broken pretty mm-hmm. easily. And what I have seen is they have a hard time healing after a painful breakup or something.
Well, sure. You'll appreciate my next book is going to be Mothers and Sons and the Use of Respect Talk. It's my fourth book with Thomas Nelson. And the number one thing that we get feedback from after our Love and Respect conference to couples is mothers
mm-hmm.
who say, this applies to my sons. I said, that's right, because he's a male.
Right.
And he is very responsive to this. And I've coached mothers on how to use what I call respect talk with their boys from age 4 on up.
Mm-hmm.
I've got this stack of testimonies of these little boys and big boys and adult sons crying, fathers crying, adult daughters toward their fathers even. We've got a dynamic there. This respect talk really gets to men in a deep way. But I always have to say, this isn't a formula. You know, I think the publishing industry, magazine industry at the counters at grocery stores, 6 ways to do this, 4 ways to do that, 3 ways. Any woman who's listening to this mustn't be thinking, I'll try that out.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a formula to try out. The question on the table is, does a male have a need, and in this case, that only a wife can meet? She's mm-hmm. the only one that can meet this need in the way that she has a need for love that only her husband can meet in this husband-wife relationship. And do our sons have a need, for instance, that only moms can meet? There's a unique role that she has. So this is not a formula. This is really the question, do they have a need to be met? And so don't test it out just to see. I have what I call this respect talk, comment test. Your husband's sitting home reading the newspaper, not doing anything. Come in the room where he was and just say, I was thinking about you today and all the things about you I respect. And I want you to know I really respect you. Mm-hmm. And then exit the room. Well, every man knows that he'll follow her, or if he's lazy, he'll call her back. Hey, what is it? What is it? You know.
Yeah.
But don't see this as a formula. See this as a faith adventure. That's something that God calls you to do as a husband or a wife for a lifetime, and that ultimately this touches the heart of Christ because this is his command to us mm-hmm. in Ephesians 5:33. And in that sense, my spouse is really irrelevant. I'm to love whether Sarah's lovable or not, and Sarah's to put on respect unto Jesus Christ whether or not I'm respectable.
Right.
You know, Emerson, you wrote this book a while ago. Even though it's just now hitting the New York Times bestseller list, you've got 1.3 million copies out there. If you wrote it again today, would it be the same book?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Because I pastored for 20 years one church, and I studied the Bible 30 hours a week, part of that philosophy of ministry. And I looked at every passage in the Old and New Testament dealing with marriage. And this really is a systematic theology on what the Bible says to couples who are Christ followers. Not everything in the Old Testament to the Israeli nation applies, but there is this overarching system here. And people who pay attention look at each chapter is based on a salient scripture to a husband or a salient scripture to the wife, and it collapses underneath that. And then I have a penchant toward practicality and try to introduce humor. And then I tried to remove all the bad things I'd ever done in terms of delivering information and try to do everything that I did well. And that was the goal. And that's the product. So
well,
I do it again.
Shown. Yeah, it's a fantastic book. I love giving it to couples.
And that's our mission, to try to get this message in front of people as much as we can. Because if you can get this in front of them, and women are saying, why hasn't anybody told us this? I mean, that's
the
number one
exactly.
thing.
Exactly. You know? And that's the way I felt, you know, when I read it. Why hasn't? And I have a great relationship with my husband.
Yes.
We work together. I respect him, I thought. But what I examined is the tone of my voice and, you know, and how I was speaking to him and the words. Emerson, how important is it for women to speak respectfully to their husbands in front of the children or about their ex-husbands to their children?
Oh, I mean, it's off the charts important. And this is why it burdens me, and as it burdens you, and that's why you asked the question, that in the long run, we're not doing any service to our children. Kids will eventually, these are little people who will become adults, and they're going to look back, and they're going to realize that if I was using these conversations as an opportunity really to be, you know, discredit this person, that I was trying to really bolster myself at their expense. One, this is that child's parent.
Exactly.
And so there's just nothing good that comes of this. You may have to eat crow in this conversation. They may have a chess move on you at this point that they've got you one up. But kids ultimately are not undiscerning. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, they can feed the child's selfishness, but eventually the kids are going to realize if my dad was manipulating me by giving in to me and trying to buy me, he'll turn on me at some point as well. That children will eventually know that. So the issue here is be the real deal. Don't try to bolster yourself at their expense. And even though these things are happening, don't be contemptuous or unloving or harsh or bad-mouthing. In the long run, this reveals who you are. This does not reveal about who they are failing to be.
Mm-hmm. Emerson, talk about the damage it does to children when husbands and wives disrespect their spouses or speak unlovingly about their spouses in front of the kids.
Well,
what does it do to the children?
I mean, again, it's the same thing. Let's step back for a moment. This is that child's mommy. This is that child's daddy. This is not about a child thinking, oh, I'm so glad, Dad, that you put Mom down because it really causes me to respect you now and to have a better, serious, you know, opinion of her, and I get it now about her. No, this isn't going to be processed that way. What it's going to be processed is they're not going to feel that what you just did was right, and in the process, they're going to hurt for their mom, and then they themselves are going to feel like, you know, you're really kind of saying something against me, because and so my feeling is that these kids are going to feel intuitively, if you're doing that toward Mom, your wife, my mother, you're going to do it toward me.
Right. And it makes kids feel crazy because that child wants to love their mother. And if Dad is constantly criticizing her and they look up to Dad, they feel dumb for wanting to love this person that Dad feels is so bad. And
That's
of
like,
course, being kids, what's wrong with me that
right.
I love her and I want to be with her?
Yes.
It really gets messy. Mm-hmm.
Well, and then they use that as ammunition. I'll take what Dad said to you. It's kind of if I'm not getting my way with Mom, then I'll relay that information, you know.
Yep.
But then I feel shame and guilt as a child because I know in my little heart that's wrong.
Yep.
And so now we're just creating a chaos that's unnecessary, you know. My dad attempted to strangle my mother when I was 2.5. My dad committed adultery when I was 11. My dad had rage issues. But my mother, very successful, dynamic woman, just a brilliant woman, had 3 businesses, just incredible, off-the-charts woman, never badmouthed my dad.
Wow.
Now, she separated the kids out of violence, and she was never imprudent. But she never, in fact, she said his dad died in 1918 in the flu epidemic and that flooded this country. He was 3 months old. Your daddy never had a daddy, and so he doesn't know how to be a daddy. That was a refrain that caused me to empathize with my dad rather than resent my dad. I was hurt by my dad, and I was sent to military school for 5 years from 8th grade to 12th grade because I threatened to kill my dad. So there were issues that were serious, but that was a false bravado when I threatened to kill him. I was just hurting, and Mom recognized that. But I think here Mom had every opportunity to just rip into my dad.
Right.
And she never did. And what did that do? It caused me to sing my mother's praises to this day.
Sure. And it made you want to learn how to be a good dad. Because your dad didn't have a role model, you need to look for role models of your own, and it worked out.
And my
fantastic
dissertation for my PhD was How to Be an Effective Father.
Wow.
National study I did on effective fathering.
That's fantastic. Emerson, thanks for doing this. Thanks for being at the SMART Conference, for being here for all of these people, and for coming on the broadcast for us.
I'm excited.
I wish we had 2 more hours.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah. To find out more about Dr. Egerich and the book, Love and Respect, head over to our website, drjamesdobson.org, or call us at 877-732-6825. This is Ryan Dobson and Dr. Meeker saying God bless, and we'll see you next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.